be like me and running out of patience on sermons about patience. I certainly am preparing them. It is good to see all y'all out this morning, and we welcome those joining us on Facebook. This series this month has all been about patience and being patient, trying to be okay when things are not okay. And I know that there are a lot of things, no doubt, on all of our hearts. But I know these last, it's now been a few years now, I guess, that has brought that out in extreme ways. I read an article about a minister who had just finished doing a funeral for a friend's father who had recently passed away. And he said something that stuck with me. He said that when we come together, and not just like in times of those, like in times of grief or at funerals, but any time that God's people come together, we pull our grief, and our grief diminishes. But we not only pull our grief, he said, but we also pull our joy. And when we pull our joy, it increases. And I really like that thought. When we pull our grief, it diminishes. And when we pull our joy, it increases. And that's what we do every week. We come here together and we pull our grief. Not just necessarily right now, not just in the battles that we are facing right now in the moment, the things that we are dealing with collectively and individually right now, but always. That this place is a place we can come to and pull our grief, and it does diminish. And a place where we can come and pull our joy, and it does increase as we celebrate the good news in Jesus. But as we are reminded that there are a lot of things in this world that are not okay, that things are not all right, not the way things are supposed to be. I was thinking of that this week, and I was looking at some numbers, and these numbers overwhelm me, and I don't certainly share this to overwhelm you, but it's probably just me. But this is reality. There are over 40 million people in the world today that are enslaved. In some kind of slavery, there are 40 million people. And that same number, or close to that same number, about 40 million unborn children every year are aborted. There are 150 million people in the world today that live in what we call extreme poverty, meaning that they exist on less than $1.90 a day. 150 million people. There are 1 billion people who live in what they call inadequate shelter. And we know that there are countless people all over the world that face all kinds of persecution and discrimination and oppression because of who they are or because of what they look like or their ethnicity. Christians, our fellow brothers and sisters around the world, it's estimated that 8 Christians are killed every day because of their faith. 10 people, certainly not in the United States, don't necessarily cross us with that. But 10 people are imprisoned every day because they are followers of Jesus. None of this is okay, is it? I read an article about a man who lived in Myanmar who was shackled for 3 days for the offense of buying bananas from a Christian vendor. And for some reason, that experience led him to go to another village and seek out a Christian minister. And then he found somebody to teach him about Jesus, and he took that minister back to his own village, and they had a Bible study in his home. And then the villagers showed up, and they dragged the minister out, severely beat him, stoned the worshipers, and kicked 5 families out of the village because they wanted to learn about Jesus. None of this is okay. None of this is the way it's supposed to be. So the question when we face these kinds of things in our own personal lives or in our family or in our country or in our world, the question we have to ask and we have to wrestle with is, how do we live patiently in a world like this? In a world where we know things are not okay, things that make us sick to our stomach, things that hurt or break our hearts in our own personal world or in our collective world, how do we live patiently in a world like that? Do we simply say, well, I'm glad that I don't personally have to experience that kind of thing? I'm doing pretty good most of the time. My life is pretty comfortable. Do we maybe live in constant fear that maybe something like that, something horrible or painful is going to happen to us? And so maybe we need to buy up all the bullets and bombs and try to rid the world of evil and drive out all of the evil in the world. How do we live patiently in a world like ours? How do we live patiently in a world where things are wrong? Things that should not be are so. And how do we hold on to that? How do we go about smiling? How do we go on singing? How do we press on? How do we do what God calls us to do and be who we are called to be, knowing that we live in a world such as this, where these kinds of things exist and happen? How do we live patiently? That's what this series is all about. Really, that's what the Bible is all about. That's what Jesus is all about, is teaching us to live patiently, joyfully in a world like this. Live with hope in a world where evil continues to exist. I think the story of David in the cave dealing with Saul, I think that's a perfect example of how we live patiently in a world like this. Here is David, the man that's after God's own heart, who, if you're not familiar with this story, he's already been anointed the next king of Israel. Samuel has already anointed David when he was a boy to be the next king of Israel, but he had to wait until Saul's reign was over. And in the beginning, David and Saul had a pretty good relationship. It was okay for a while, and then it wasn't okay. Saul started throwing spears at David, and eventually he drove him out of town, and then eventually he pursues David into the wilderness with 3,000 troops. That's not okay, is it? It's not okay for someone's jealous rage to persecute and oppress and chase someone to try and murder them. That's not okay. But how is David supposed to live and be okay in a world and a situation that simply isn't okay? And then Saul falls right into David's hands. And that's where we pick up the story this morning. And I think it will help us to live patiently in a world like ours. Beginning in verse 3 of 1 Samuel chapter 24, it says, "He came to the sheepfolds by the way, where there was a cave. And Saul went in to relieve himself. Now David and his men were sitting in the innermost parts of the cave. And the men of David said to him, 'Here is the day which the Lord said to you, Behold, I will give your enemy into your hand, and you shall do to him as it shall seem good to you.' Then David arose and stealthily cut off a corner of Saul's robe." It's like they're saying, this is your chance, David. Here's your opportunity. Just seize it. God has placed him into your hand. All of this running, all of this hiding, all of this persecution, it can all be over today. All you have to do is take matters into your own hand, kill this guy, and let's be done with it. Let's be done with this rule and reign of this evil king and all of the hateful and hurtful things that he's caused. It's all going to be over. All you have to do is take the opportunity to rid the world and your own life of Saul. And David certainly had people in his ear that were justifying this sort of decision. And David could have justified it. We all, probably sitting here today, would look at David and say, that makes sense to me. It seems very incredibly justifiable to take Saul's life. And that really is the way it is when we're tempted to take matters into our own hands and not live patiently and not wait for the Lord and just go ahead and do the thing that's going to make the hurt stop and make the pain go away. When we are tempted to take matters into our own hand and do what we want to do, there's always a way to justify it, isn't there? There's always a way to justify what we want to do, but yet David doesn't do that. Instead of taking Saul's life, he takes a corner of Saul's robe, and he even feels guilty about that, because again, here is Saul as the king. He is God's anointed king. Even though David is also the anointed king, he feels guilty for cutting off a piece of Saul's robe. And then after that event has passed and Saul has left the cave, David has the opportunity to call Saul out and rebuke Saul for what he's doing and highlight the different way that David handled the situation. And here's what he says in verse 11. He says, "See, my father, the corner of your robe is in my hand. For by the fact that I cut off the corner of your robe and did not kill you, you may know and see that there is no wrong or treason in my hands. I have not sinned against you, though you hunt my life to take it. Now, really, 1 Samuel is all about contrast. This story is all about contrast. The contrast between Saul, who is a king after man's own heart. Saul is a fleshly king. From his fear to his pride to his hate to his anger to his jealousy, he is a king after man's own heart. And David, of course, is a king, and not in every way, but in so many ways, is a man and king after God's own heart. David highlights and foreshadows the king that his, let's try this, great-great-great-great-grandson, Jesus, will be, who is both fully God and fully man. Jesus, who is God's true anointed one, who is the king after God's own heart, Jesus. And David, in so many ways, foreshadows his coming, and that's what we see highlighted here. We see that contrast, and it's an incredible contrast. David says, here's the way you treat me. You hunt my life to take it. You are trying to murder me. And I had the opportunity to murder you, and I didn't do it. Do you see the contrast, Saul? Do you see the difference between the way you treat me and the way I'm treating you? And that's always been the way God's people are called to live. In contrast, that there has to be a difference between the way that the fleshly, earthly, worldly people, the way that we want to do things, the way that every single one of us desires to do things, and the way that God calls us to do things. There is supposed to be a difference. But if David were to do to Saul exactly what Saul was doing to David, what difference would there be? That's the question, right? If there's no difference in the way you handle your problems and the way the world handles their problems, then are we really living as God's people? If we handle our problems the same way the world handles their problems, we're living no differently. Jesus would ask questions like, you love people who love you. Big deal. Everybody does that. You're nice to the people who are nice to you. So what? We all do that. You have to be different. In what way? In that you love your enemies. And instead of treating them the way that everybody else treats their enemies, you treat your enemies differently. You deal with evil differently. You deal with people differently. You deal with people that are even out to get you differently than everyone else does. Everyone else treats their family and friends and people that are close to them and that they love, they treat them well. Everybody does that, but nobody does this. This is unusual. This is the huge contrast between what Saul was doing and what David was doing. Verse 12 says, may the Lord judge between me and you. May the Lord avenge me against you, but my hand shall not be against you. As the proverb of the ancient says, out of the wicked comes wickedness, but my hand shall not be against you. Do you see what David's saying? Out of the wicked comes wickedness. Evil people do evil things. And David's saying is if it was me, if you're trying to do this, then if I'm trying to do this to you, then I'm going to be just as evil. If you're to stop evil with evil, guess what you are? You're evil. If you fight lies with more lies, guess what you are? You're a liar. If you fight darkness with more darkness, guess what? You're darkness. Wickedness comes from wicked. The wicked do wicked things. And David says, that's why I'm not going to do things like that. You see, you're doing this to me because your heart's not right, because you're moved by a spirit that's not God's, but I'm not going to do this to you. I'm not going to stoop to your level. The end doesn't justify the means. Or as my mom used to say, two wrongs don't make a right. Do they? God's people have always been called, always been called to be different, to respond and deal with problems and evil and their enemies differently. David lives this out in this moment, but Jesus calls us and his people to live this out in every moment. That we don't stoop to their level, that we don't fight evil with evil, that we don't fight wickedness with wickedness. Verse 14 says, after whom has the king of Israel come out? After whom do you pursue? After a dead dog? After a flea? May the Lord therefore be judge and give sentence between you and me, and see to it and plead my cause and deliver me from your hand. I want to be really clear right here. David is not quiet about Saul's sin, is he? He's not just brushing it aside and sweeping it under the rug and just being like, well, I'm not going to say anything. I'm just going to keep my mouth shut. He's not. He's not being quiet about Saul's sin. He's calling it out. He's highlighting it. He's saying, this is wrong. You're pursuing me when I'm no threat to you. I'm no threat to your rule. I'm no threat to your life or your family. I'm a flea. I'm a dead dog. I'm a nobody. And you're hunting me like I'm enemy number one. That's wrong. And Saul, you're wrong for doing it. David is highlighting and calling out and rebuking Saul's behavior because he has the moral high ground to do so. Precisely because he refuses to stoop to Saul's level. And again, if David were to do to Saul what Saul is trying to do to David, what ground would David have to say this is wrong? He has the moral high ground to say this is wrong because he's not willing to do to Saul what Saul is willing to do to him. Verse 16 says, as soon as David had finished speaking these words to Saul, Saul said, is this your voice, my son David? And Saul lifted up his voice and wept. He said to David, you are more righteous than I, for you have repaid me good where I have repaid you evil. Saul thankfully here recognizes what's going on. And isn't this New Testament ethic? Isn't this what Jesus calls his disciples to do? Isn't this what Jesus lives out, is to repay evil with good? And that's hard, isn't it? Nobody does this. That's why it's shocking. This is a shocking story. Saul is shocked. David's own men are shocked. Everyone is shocked. We should be shocked when we read it, because nobody does this. Nobody has the opportunity to end their pain and suffering and to take vengeance on their enemy and lets the opportunity go. No, nobody does that, except for God's people. We do that. That's what we've been called to do. And Saul recognizes that you paid me with good. And that's what Jesus calls us to do. Retaliate with love. Retaliate with kindness. Verse 18, this is still Saul speaking. He says, and you have declared this day how have you dealt well with me, in that you did not kill me when the Lord put me into your hands. For if a man finds his enemy, will he let him go away safe? So may the Lord reward you with good for what you have done to me this day. Again, Saul recognizes that nobody does this. Nobody lets their enemy go away safe. And verse 20 says, and now behold, I know that you shall surely be king, and that the kingdom of Israel shall be established in your hand. And that's what we want to happen, isn't it? What we want to happen in being kind to those who are harmful to us, what we want to happen is that we break the cycle. And somebody has to, don't they? When there is hurt for hurt and pain for pain and hate for hate, and everyone continues to retaliate with more of the same, and we fight fire with fire, somebody's got to step in and break that cycle. Somebody's got to step in and be man enough and say, no more of this. I'm not going to retaliate with the same things that you have done to me. I'm not going to do that. I'm going to retaliate with love and kindness and good. And our hope, or a hope, is that they are going to recognize, like Saul, and say, you're right and I'm wrong and I'm changing my heart. But that is not the way it always works out, is it? In fact, even in David and Saul's situation, unfortunately, that's not the end of the story. So our ultimate hope is not that conversion will happen. That's certainly what we want to happen. We want people's hearts and minds to change. And sometimes that's exactly what does happen. But our ultimate hope is in the justice of God. David was willing to do this, to let his enemy go away safely and not take vengeance, to treat his enemy with kindness and mercy and love, because he trusted that God would bring Saul to account. David trusted that God was going to fix the situation. He trusted that God was going to vindicate him, raise him up, and bring Saul down. He trusted that was going to happen, but he was not willing to participate because he trusted God. And I wish the story ended there, but unfortunately, in a couple of chapters later, chapter 26, we find Saul pursuing David again, 3,000 troops again. They sneak into David's camp, David and Abishai. And in verse 8, it says that Abishai said to David, God has given your enemy into your hand this day. Now please, let me pin him to the earth with one stroke of the spear, and I will not strike him twice. But David said to Abishai, do not destroy him. For who can put out his hand against the Lord's anointed and be guiltless? And David said, as the Lord lives, and the Lord will strike him, or the day will come to die, or he will go down into battle and perish. The Lord forbid that I should put my hand against the Lord's anointed. Again, David has this opportunity. This time he even has a friend that can do it for him. And again, he has all kinds of ways that he can justify himself. But he says, listen, God's going to take care of this problem. He's either going to get old and die, or God's going to strike him dead, or he's going to go into battle and die one way or another. Saul's time is going to end, but I'm not going to be the one that does it. I'm going to wait on the Lord. And again, David is specifically saying this about Saul because Saul is God's anointed king, but Jesus calls us to do this with all of our enemies, to treat our enemies with the same kindness and love, and to not deal with our problems the way that other people deals with theirs. David, again, when he was out of the situation and he has the opportunity to call Saul into account and highlight that once again, Saul, once again, you tried to kill me, and once again, I had the opportunity to kill you and I didn't. And so he says in verse 23, the Lord rewards every man for his righteousness and his faithfulness, for the Lord gave you into my hand today, and I would not put my hand against the Lord's anointed. Behold, as your life was precious this day in my sight, so may my life be precious in the sight of the Lord, and may he deliver me out of all tribulations. That's how we live patiently in a world like this. That's how we treat other people with kindness and love and mercy. But because our hope, and by hope I mean our confidence is what David's confidence was. Just as our enemy's life is precious in our sight, that our life will be precious in the sight of the Lord. And we have nothing to fear, right? Again, we nail this nail over and over again on the head. We know how this story ends. We know where the story is headed. The situation right now is certainly not okay. But we know that God will make everything right. Again, that doesn't mean we sit idly by. It doesn't mean we don't do anything. It doesn't mean we don't call out evil. We certainly call out evil. We are to be the body of the Anointed One. Jesus is the descendant of David, the Anointed One, and we are his people, so we are his body. We are the body of the Anointed One, and we live in a time much like David lived in that God has anointed his people as the next coming and reigning ones, us, with our Lord, and evil still continues to exist and rule and reign. And we sort of live in this period of overlap where there is still evil and pain and things are not okay, but we do know how the story ends. And here's how we live that out. Yeah, we call evil evil, and we highlight just how evil evil is by following the one who refuses to do evil. And then we do what David did, and we leave it up to God to deal with evil, to deal with wrong, to deal with sin. Well, we might put it this way. We call out wrong, we live out love, and we leave the rest to God. Isn't that what David did? Isn't that what Jesus does? Isn't that what Jesus calls us to do? Call out wrong, live out love, and leave the rest to God. And that can be incredibly difficult in the midst of pain and hurt. So many times we want to take matters into our own hands, and so many times we could justify ourselves for not being patient, for not waiting on the Lord. But then we're reminded, page after page, story after story, and especially when we look to the cross, that God will take care of his people. He will raise his people up. He will deliver his people, and he will deal with evil. So in the meantime, we wait patiently. We call out wrong. We live out love, and we leave the rest to God. This morning, if there's any way that we can help you or encourage you in any way this morning, now would be the opportunity to come as together we stand and we sing.